Welcome to the Upland Nation podcast. My name is Scott Linden. I'm your host. I'm so glad you could join me today, tonight, whenever it is you're listening, and that's the joy of podcasting, I guess. I made a kind of late New Year's resolution after all of this coronavirus stuff. I just decided, gosh dang it, we need to stay positive. We need to keep our eyes on the prize, looking downrange at hunting season and all the things we can do now that might actually help us maintain our sanity. So bear with me, as that's what we celebrate this week on the Upland Nation podcast, outfitted by Cabela's. In addition to all of your calls, and I got a long line of callers already, we'll take a look at some public access ground, hunting strategy and dog handling tips, and a little bit of everything else, including your comments from Facebook. So lots to talk about here, all built around our favorite bird species. Yeah, you know, when you start thinking about why you go, there's about three good reasons. One of them is the puzzles, the challenges, the beautiful places where birds live. So I thought it'd be fun to ask a little bit more about all of that, and especially why you love birds and the reason you hunt specific species. So we'll get to that in a couple minutes. In the meanwhile, got my first text message this morning asking what we'll do if travel is restricted and we can't hunt out of state. Well, I, again, like to think that by then, all things will be blown over. It'll be a distant memory, this whole lockdown, house arrest situation. So, you know, let's just keep a positive outlook and see what we can do in terms of making it happen. It's all up to us. Remember, everybody who's making these decisions is an elected official or works for an elected official, and we do have a voice in all of that, theoretically. So make your feelings known to those who allegedly are public servants. Good luck on that. In the meanwhile, watch out if you're in Washington. They closed the fishing season. Can you freaking believe it? State parks, all campgrounds in Oregon are closed. Probably true in a lot of other states as well. I heard of one, found it on the website, one national forest closed completely. Closed. Okay, folks, it's getting a little bit crazy out there. All right, enough about that. Here's how I'm staying positive. I spent last night on Google Maps starting to lay out my road trips for this fall. Maybe that's something you want to start working on now as well. And if you're looking for suggestions, if you didn't listen to last week's podcast, go back and do that, because we had a ton of callers telling you where to go, as well as my new website, findbirdhuntingspots.com. Take a look. I'd appreciate it. If you sign up for the mailing list, you're entered to win a pointer over and under shotgun. Okay. Well, one of my good friends in the world of sponsorships, Sage and Breaker Mercantile, just talked to Fred Bohm this afternoon. In fact, Fred is enjoying his sequestering. He got stuck in Hawaii and he's making the most of it. I'm a little bit jealous, Fred. I think I told you that about four times on our phone call. He's hunting, which you can do on a number of species out there. But beyond all that, Fred is a good guy. He knows his firearms. He knows his hunting. Right now, Firearm Grease is their newest product. It protects the high-friction areas. Learn more about all of their products, gun care and gun cleaning products crafted at the highest caliber. Just go to sageandbreaker.com. And you know, I'm also a big believer in the Dogtra TNB dual collar. Just put that on Flick for our last training session. We are getting closer and closer to steady to wing shot and fall and his retrieving, thanks in large part to that Dogtra TNB dual collar is just about there. No toggling from one dog to the next, or one collar to the next, if you will. It's all right there, two sets of buttons, so you don't have to even look at the touch screen. If you know you're handheld, you know what to do with those buttons. One set for each collar. Believe me, it works. I'm a believer. You'll be a believer too. Learn more and get a 10% discount with the code SLU. UN10 at checkout on any product that costs over $200. Okay, favorite bird species, and on the line with me from somewhere in the, I'll call it the upper Midwest. Don, welcome to the program. It's great to talk with you.
Well, thank you, Scott. I appreciate the call.
It's always great to see you, and I hope I'll run into you again over at the Cabela's store in Mitchell, South Dakota on opening weekend. You planning on getting out there this year?
We're planning on it. We certainly are.
Excellent. That might be the lead-in to the big question right now, but you tell me, if you had to pick it, if you had to narrow it down to one bird species to hunt, what would it be?
Oh, gosh. At one time, I would say quail, and that's when quail were so plentiful. That was, oh, gosh. We would get 10, 12 coveys of birds by noon.
Wow.
And that was just incredible. All the dog work you'd see and everything, and it was just fantastic. Now, the quail are a little more scarce, and you have to travel, and I hunt pheasant. I love to hunt the pheasants. And the prairie chicken. I watched your show with Mr. Tinker and at Horse Feathers Lodge, and oh my gosh, that got me fired up, and I thought, I can do this. So we went out there, and then a friend of mine, we went out there on the prairie by ourselves, and we did just as well. And it's incredible. It's something about the dogs on point and walking in behind them and the birds flying. Now, you can't, I don't think you can beat a covey of 15, 20 birds getting up like in the old heydays, but, you know, a bunch of prairie chicken doing like a popcorn flush with about 12 of those birds is pretty exciting.
The hair on the back of my neck is standing up just talking about that very thing. And you cover some ground out there. What are you running these days? You're running big pointers, aren't you?
Yes, sir. I'm running English pointers. Mine are Elihu pointers. And we put the trackers on them, the Garmin trackers. And in an hour and a half, my one dog, Rio, he covered 18 and a half miles. And, of course, we were on horseback. And we had limited out.
Wow.
And with my buddy Gary and myself, we'd limited out on chickens. And it was incredible. It really was.
You know, it's hard to decide what to like more about that scenario. I mean, I love the wide open spaces and being able to see that dog at 800 yards, but I also love the horseback thing. And I've written a story or two about that for a magazine. Tell us, Don, do you feel like I do about that? It just changes your entire perspective, literally and figuratively.
It does. It does. You can see so much more on horseback. You can you cover so much more ground. You really get to see how a dog is thinking, where he's going, how he's hunting this, and at the same time he's checking in with you and watching you. You know, I'm not one of these big scream and holler guys. My dog watches me or watches the horse, and whichever way he sees my face pointing, and you've talked about this on your show, that the dog sees your face and goes to the direction you're going. Well, when he gets way out there, he uses the horse.
Yeah.
And gosh, is that cool.
Yeah.
You know, and then you see him on a tree line, or you see him go down in the valley, and you see him use the wind, and you just appreciate the dogs a little more because you see how smart they are.
Oh, I agree 100%. It's absolutely true. I never thought about the horse as a giant weather vane, if you will. You know,
yeah.
But Don, you bring up something that I don't know if we can answer this in a brief moment or two, but you know, it seems like every single prairie chicken I've shot was by accident on a sharptail hunt. Do you actually go out and look for these dang birds?
Yes, sir. We sure did. And we thought we were going to get into some Sharpies, and I haven't had a Sharpie flush within range of me yet. Now, we found huns, we found chickens, we found pheasants, but those Sharpies, I don't know what the deal is with them. I must be holding my mouth wrong or something. I don't know.
Well, maybe next season you bring me a horse, as long as you tack it up for me, because I wouldn't dare try that. I'll show you the sharp tail side of things if you'll trade me off and show me something about those prairie chickens.
Oh, they'll be fun.
Okay.
Yeah.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much. Sure appreciate your being on the podcast. Finally, Don, it's great to talk with you. Hope to see you in October in South Dakota. Thanks.
Oh gosh, I hope to be there. Thank you. Thanks, Scott.
You're welcome. All right, we're still talking positive here. And from way up in the Great White North, David joins me on the line. David, how you doing these days?
Oh, pretty good.
And
could be worse.
Yeah, you're in a lockdown just like us. You know, there's not much difference between the two, I'm sure. And knock wood, it's precautionary for most everybody. But let's talk positive here. Number one, what kind of dogs you running these days?
I'm not running any dogs. That's me. I do my own dogging.
Oh, my God. All right. So, dogless hunter. This might be a first for the Upland Nation podcast, but that's great. We're inclusive here, so good on you. We're trying to stay positive with our take on our favorite bird species. How would you narrow that down?
Ruffed grouse, number one.
Yeah.
And pheasant, number two.
Mm-hmm.
And woodcock, number three.
All right, so I'm guessing you're in maybe a little bit further east than I thought originally. Whereabouts are you up there?
I'm about a mile from downtown Detroit.
Okay. All right, that explains everything. Well, tell me why you like the ruffies so much, because they are an intriguing bird that I don't get to hunt enough. So get me excited about ruff grouse.
Well, they're a hard bird to hunt. I think the old rule of thumb was that for every grouse that you flushed, you would have to flush 10 to bring one home. Does that make sense to you?
Yes, it does. It's a lot like steelhead fishing. 1,000 casts.
Yeah. So because of that, and because I don't hunt with a dog, I still put up birds, but I don't bring home that many in a day. Certainly nowhere near the limit. As a result of that, I look for other things. I look for the country that I'm hunting in. I look for other animals. I look for... just a good time. I don't believe that, I learned a long time ago that a good hunt was when everybody got there safe, had a good time, and got home safe. That was a good hunt. Anything else was a plus.
Amen to that. It's absolutely true. In fact, I just finished a magazine article, and I mentioned in there something along those lines. And then I mentioned something about a camera, how a camera will focus you on things other than that. Being dogless probably does much the same thing. You're not looking for your dog. So all of that mental energy maybe can go to all those other things you're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Now, I've been, this area that I hunt, I've been hunting it for so long, I know where all the coverts are.
Yeah.
And I know pretty much where I can find grouse in the morning, in the afternoon, around noon. And I tend to put myself in these positions. Still, you can put up grouse, but because of that sort of a 1 in 10 rule, it's still tough. I try not to wear myself out. You can go into the bush and knock yourself out in 20 minutes, busting brush. So I try to stick to snowmobile trails, old ancient two tracks. And if I find a likely spot, just go in here or there or stand around. I find moving snow or slow helps a lot.
Yeah.
Where I might take 2, 3, 4 steps, stop, wait a few minutes, 2, 3, 4 steps. And while you're doing that, of course, you can enjoy the countryside.
I love it. It is a different way to look at things for those of us who have dogs. But you know, you're not the only one, I'm sure, who's out there poking around by themselves. And this whole idea of being able to appreciate a whole bunch of other things when you don't have to chase your dog all the time, it's eye opening to those of us who do chase our dogs all the time. If you had to narrow it down to one bit of advice for dogless rough grouse hunter, what would you tell them to do?
Never give up. it's as easy as that. Statement that I made, about everything else is a plus. I've been hunting 65 years now, and I've met a lot of characters. And many years ago, a real odd one told me that statement. And I say a real odd one because he was known as a local poacher. Now, I'd hunted with him many, many, many times since, and I've come to find out he wasn't a poacher. He was just a good hunter. And he was out there when no one else was. He, from first light to dark, he never gave up. I never saw bad weather drive him out of the bush. So that's one thing I learned from him is never give up. Nobody ever got anything having lunch back at camp.
Amen. You're so right. It's absolutely true. David, those are lessons for the ages. From a dogless hunter who's been around the block a few thousand times, I'm Scott Linden. That's David. You're listening to the Upland Nation podcast. David, thanks for being on the program with me. And at the Facebook page, some great comments as well. Jay Lonner says, wild pheasants are his favorite. It's always a challenge to get a good point on a running bird. Then if I shoot like normal, it's fun watching the long tracking retrieve. Jay, I know what you mean. Now, Jerry Whiteley says, my favorite bird to hunt is the bird in season. I can't travel to hunt them all, although would love to. Well, neither can we. I mean, we play the cards we're dealt with, Jerry, and that's great attitude. So get out there and remember that it's not that far away. Stay positive. That's my goal, and I hope it's yours as well. Keeping it positive here at the Upland Nation podcast, favorite bird species and why. I guess I should confess to my own, but it changes all the time. When I started this whole discussion about 2 weeks ago, it was sharp-tailed grouse, but since then, it might be something else. But on the line with me is David, and David, you, when I asked that question of you, you had a pretty good answer. Why don't you tell us what you said?
Yeah, I said bobwhite quail. Because when a covey of about 15 explodes, your heart about beats through your chest, and that there's such an adrenaline rush there. Target acquisition and picking out one bird, even amongst 15, can be really, really difficult. So that's why bobwhite quail are my favorite.
You know, if you could bottle adrenaline, well, you can, I guess, except we can't take it. We need a prescription for it, I guess. But you're man, oh man, isn't that the truth? And, you know, even we jumped 3 valley quail yesterday on my run with my he's no longer a young dog. He's 2 3/4 years old. But anyway, Flick pointed, and up come 3 valley quail. And man, they were almost as good as that 15 bird covey that you probably jumped that last fall.
Oh yeah.
Is it quail? Yeah, I mean, there are some other covey birds out there. We all know that, but is it because you're so familiar with the quail world, or what is it, David?
Yeah, I think so. I grew up in Cleveland, Ohio, and working on a dairy farm in Lyonsville, Pennsylvania, of some cousins of mine. So we'd always try to go out and hunt pheasants when I was a kid, but they were always pen-raised release pheasants. Nobody really had dogs. So we were more so into goose hunting and duck hunting and stuff like that, and some deer hunting. And then for about the last 10 years, I've lived in Texas, both between my job in the Coast Guard and then as a police officer, mostly in Central Texas and West Texas. And an uncle of mine had a deer lease out there that I'd get invited to, mainly because I got Brittany bird dogs and really desired to start chasing upland birds. It was always kind of a bucket list thing that I always wanted to do and never really got into. And really for the first 5 years of that 10-year period, I can't eat, like the bird numbers were so high. It was amazing. There were coveys everywhere. You couldn't walk to the deer stand in the morning without flushing a covey in the dark and about having a heart attack.
Are you just saying that to make us all mad or what?
Well, it was really the glory days for a long time. And I know for especially about the last 5 years, there's been a lot of habitat loss, a lot of eye worm issues and other stuff that they've really been trying to figure out and fight. And it's really been unfortunate. So I think about the last 5 years, I've been doing a lot of driving up to Nebraska and South Dakota, where I actually live now, and it's been more so pheasants. But about last year and the year before, I got into a couple surprise coveys in northeast Nebraska of bobwhite quail. You know, out there, you know, 2 pheasants in the game bag, having a good time with the dogs, and you start hearing that epic and those other little sounds that they make, and I was second guessing myself, like, holy crap, like I'm used to that in Central Texas and West Texas out near Abilene with quail, but then your dog's ears start perking up, who's so used to quail. And you know, a covey, I think the first time I flushed a covey in northeast Nebraska, I didn't even shoot. I was just so shocked and not expecting it, but it was cool to find birds up in the Missouri River area of Nebraska.
Oh, I love that country, and I've never found a quail up there, believe it or not, but I love that area, and I will someday, I promise you. But yep. Boy, it sounds like you're, you know, relatively new to our world, I guess, all things considered, and you're really getting everybody a little bit psyched, and that's the whole idea here. So I'm glad for you, and jealous at the same time, David. Thanks a lot for sharing that with everybody on the Upland Nation podcast.
Oh, absolutely. Thanks for calling.
Oh boy, so true. Whether it was bobwhites or valley quail or something else, maybe a little bit bigger, they can all get that adrenaline pumping, I'm sure. Gary joins me on the line now. Gary, what bird gets your adrenaline flowing?
Well, I'd have to say pheasants. I really held a special place in my heart for the pheasants. But, you know, I grew up here in Oklahoma. My dad carried me on his shoulders while we were quail hunting. Probably 4 or 5 years old, I guess.
Wow.
He had a big old white English pointer we named Chalk. I don't know why his name was Chalk, but he was quite a dog. And but I migrated out to the Oklahoma Panhandle, and this is where my love for pheasants came in.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, go ahead, Scott.
Oh, I was going to say your dad had a built-in excuse for bad shooting with a, you know, dead weight like you on his shoulders, right?
Well, I was skinnier as a kid than I am as an old man.
Oh yeah. Oh great.
But yeah, so I grew up out in the Hooker, Guymon area, if you know where that's at.
Oh yeah.
Panhandle, Texas County. And so big farming community, you know, so wheat, milo, corn, big popular crops out there at the time. And so just was natural. I mean, the pheasants were everywhere. They were abundant, and you had to dodge them with the cars and the trucks and the motorcycles. And so we enjoyed hunting them. But we would had a lot of friends, family friends that were corporate farmers. And I would help to harvest, drive truck, move pipe for irrigation, whatever I could do to help in off time. And with that came some privileges of getting to hunt. And I would always ramrod the hunts when my father and my brothers would come out and a couple of my dad's friends. And we would get a group together of 6 to 10 guys. 10 was usually better for a nice irrigated milo field that was very thick. And we would we get, you know, so many in the field and hopefully two blockers. And we would push the fields back and forth. And, oh, my goodness, we had a couple of fields over around Tyrone that were just honey holes. And to have at the end of those, at the end of those, you know, quarter mile stretch through there on the section, just the anticipation of the rise of those birds was something else. And to have those big noisy birds flushing up underneath your feet and sometimes literally in your face was phenomenal.
Oh, yeah.
It really gets my blood pumping.
Mine too. I love it. And you know, you're just describing exactly the feeling that we have. If our listeners have ever been on one of those kind of a hunts, and you know, it's not for everybody, and I only like it a couple times a year, but if you know about it and you know it right, then as soon as you can see the orange hats of the blockers, you know, really need a gun to port arms and get ready.
Right.
There's no feeling like it. And I can't let you go without one bit of advice on those kind of hunts. It sounds like you've done it a few thousand times. What do you want your blockers to do when they're over there?
Well, we always started off with a safety talk. Don't shoot on the ground. Don't shoot a running bird, especially toward the blockers. And don't shoot the blockers. but we would have those safety talks and said, hey, let the bird get up. You know, let the bird get off of the dog. Let it get up in the air. When we get down to the end, these birds are going to be coming up. They're going to go up. We don't need to shoot a running bird. And so we would have those safety talks about that before we would get into the field. But, you know, later in life, I've come to enjoy me and a buddy. I have two German Shorthair pointers now. And we had just a phenomenal hunt, several hunts this year, just my buddy and I, hitting some old homesteads, a couple of old tree rows, and just really didn't miss the big groups this year, and really just enjoyed the quiet talks with my buddy and watching the dogs work was really a blessing this year.
Yeah, I had a whole season of that, and I'm knocking wood as I say it. I won't bore anybody with all the details, but there's a lot to be said for that. You know, and I wrote a story a couple of years ago about hunting by myself, and that's also fun. You got to do it in the right place and that sort of thing. But yeah, the smaller groups have their place. The bigger groups, once in a while, you know, there was a reason Barnum and Bailey and Ringling Brothers had three rings in their circus. So, you know, you think about all of this, what I call the stimulus overload of a big hunt like that. There's something to be said for it once in a while.
Yeah, and it is fun to have those groups and to have that big activity at the end of those stretches, those runs back and forth. And especially that very last one, you're thinking, man, it's going to explode. They're all going to be down there. Yeah. And but there was also very, very special this year. We had some comedy. when you get into those, some of those old homesteads, there's some hazards in there, and badger holes and coyote dens. My buddy and I both learned how to roll around really well after you step in a couple of those holes, and to laugh at each other and say, "Hey, is your gun okay? Can I grab your gun?"
Yeah. Couldn't care less about your femur, but let's make sure the gun stock didn't break.
Right.
Yeah.
But, you know, that panhandle holds a special place for me. Growing up out there and then having just those family times and those close friend times, the conversation in the field. And I think I mentioned on your question the other day about my brother. December 2nd was his birthday.
Yes.
And we always, when we had the bigger group hunts, we would always sing, because we'd be out there. Opening day was December 1st, and so we were always in the field, usually on the 2nd. And just hearing, you know, 10 guys walking down through the field saying happy birthday to him was always pretty cool. And he's gone now. My brother's passed on, but we I still sing that. Even my buddy Mitch and I, we did it this year, just he and I out there. We still remember Tommy and sing about his birthday and think about all those old fun hunts we used to have.
I love it. Those kind of traditions. In fact, that ought to be a podcast too. Those kind of traditions are pretty special. We have a couple on our first chucker hunt of the season every year that I won't bore anybody with today, but there's, you know, they really do kind of bring everything back to right to the heart. You know, they really mm-hmm. do. I'm really glad you shared that with us, Gary, and
sure.
Everybody else start thinking about that. I'm going to ask that in an upcoming podcast, and I expect all your answers that time around. In the meanwhile, that's Gary. I'm Scott Linden. This is the Upland Nation podcast. Gary, thanks so much for being with us.
Pleasure. Thank you, Scott.
One of the many reasons we go, and so glad to hear those stories. You probably got one as well. Hey, don't go away. We're only about halfway through this whole discussion. Favorite bird species. What's yours? Just ponder that for a moment while you're listening to this message from Dr. Tim's Performance Dog Food. Learn more and pick up your 30% discount on your first order at drtims.com. All you got to do is use the code Upland Nation. Upland Nation is the code at checkout. One of the things I love about Dr. Tim's food is the unique blend of fibers that maximizes proper digestion along with intestinal health. Yeah, just like us, dogs need the right kind of fibers in the right formulation, and then the end result, pardon the pun, becomes a much easier cleanup in the yard or the kennel. You know why, I know why. Let's skip the details. Learn more and get your 30% discount on your first order at drtims.com. Use the code Upland Nation. And you know that every time you shoot a gun without proper hearing protection, did you hear that? Hello? I said every time you shoot, good. Because my friends at espamerica.com want you to know you're assaulting your ears with up to 150 decibels of deafening sound. Repeat exposure over 90 decibels will result in permanent hearing loss. A single gun blast, 120 decibels, do the same thing. Learn more about all your choices at espamerica.com. Shop around, find the one that works for you. Remember, they're all custom fitted, and you don't need to stand in front of everybody else walking past at the sportsman's show. You can get it done in the comfort of your own local audiologist's office. Learn more at espamerica.com. Coming to you from the Cabela's Podcast Studio, I'm Scott Linden. You're listening to the Upland Nation Podcast. We're staying positive, talking about the bird species we love and why. But it is spring. And in addition to spring cleaning, one of the things I'm doing, and maybe you are too, is organizing training gear for the rest of the spring and the summer, trying to get all our stuff in the right place. You know the saying, right place for everything, everything in its place. Well, one of the things that I am a big believer in is bird launchers. You know, the little radio-controlled trampolines, if you will. Some of them are radio-controlled. Some you just yank on a cord if you want, save yourself a couple $100. Either way, if you can't get on wild birds all season to train your young dogs how to be steady, well, you can simulate that with those bird launchers. It takes a little bit of practice, but if you think like a wild bird and you put your dog out and you stage manage it correctly, your bird launcher and your pointing hand, you know, the one that's pointing to the button on your bird launching remote control, can pretty much simulate that wild bird. Not the same as the real deal, but it's better than nothing if all you have access to is pigeons. So bear that in mind and get organized for this fall. Yeah, that's right. I said this fall. We're getting ready. You're getting ready. We're all going to have a good time. We are going to hunt this fall. I promise you. All right. Thank you for listening. And we're going to get back to the phones. So joining me on the line, warmed up and ready to go, John, welcome to the Upland Nation podcast.
Thank you very much, Scott. Glad to be here.
Tell me a little bit about what you do for fun during bird hunting season.
Well, I like my favorite is the American woodcock, and I live in northwest Pennsylvania, and that's probably half of our take as far as hunting goes. And I have two really good German short-haired pointers, and that's what we enjoy to do. And we do pheasant hunt, we do grouse hunt, but the grouse numbers are down a little bit in this part of the country. And for the most part, it's woodcock and pheasant right now. So.
Well, you're lucky to have the variety there. And I'll tell you, you know, it's been funny, and you probably know more about this than me, although I have a lot of avid woodcock and rough grouse hunting friends. The cycles, if you will, for the two different bird species seem to quite often be opposite. So when you can't find a lot of one, you might find a lot of the other. Has that been your experience?
That's exactly correct. What they did, I know the Rough Grouse Society in the state have timbered some areas like about 20 years ago. And that's the early succession forest is what we're trying to get back. And the woodcock numbers have really come back nicely. Now, grouse in this area have kind of like cycled down a little bit because of the West Nile virus and all that. And then, you know, hopefully those numbers will bounce back soon. So,
well, what is it about woodcock that that trips your trigger, John?
I don't know. Well, I think that they, what I like mostly about them is that they sit well for the dogs.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, they don't like a grouse. Well, they have a tendency to run and bounce, like the dogs can bounce them. It's almost like a pheasant at times, but woodcocks seem to stay pretty tight. And it's, you know, it's more of a fun of a hunt where they can, you know, the dogs will find them and point them, and they stay pretty good. And you know, you flush them and there it goes. So
loving it. It seems like
I love it.
When I'm woodcock hunting, I'm harvesting more alders than woodcock, but I don't mind.
Exactly. Yes.
Well,
I love it.
You run both your dogs at the same time?
Yes. I have a brace of German short-haired pointers. One's 3 and one's 2.
Oh, wow.
And, yeah, they're really good. They're young dogs, but, they're really good dogs. And, I've been with the same breeder now for 20 years, and he's in the area and it's part of the state. So it's really good.
Do you think that those dogs are like a woodcock specialist, or do we even go so far with short hairs?
I wouldn't. Well, they're good on all the birds. I mean, you can use them like a lot of guys in this area, like setters and that, and Brittany's, and, you know, I just like the short hairs. I don't know. They're, to me, they're real versatile. They like the water. they can handle cold weather, not too cold, but, you know, it gets chilly out here at times, you know, but they can handle it fairly well. And, but that's just me. That's my opinion. I think, you know, I'm a short hair guy.
Well, I'm setting up an interview for an upcoming podcast with the relatively new CEO for the Ruffed Grouse Society and American Woodcock Society, and I'll ask him the same thing. But in your opinion, what would the difference be between woodcock habitat and ruffed grouse habitat?
Well, the two habitats they kind of roll over a little bit. Now, woodcock habitat is more of a moist ground cover and leaf cover. It's the ground is a little bit more damp because they like to get those worms. And rough grouse cover is a little bit more snarly and thicker. They like those blowdowns with the piney blowdowns and early succession intermixed with it. Mm-hmm. Where woodcock cover is more of a, they like the same kind of cover, but it's damp on the ground.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
So that's my opinion. I just, you know, not I've taken them in drier country too, but for the most part, 90% of it's really wet, so or damp.
They're such a mysterious little critter as well, because they're here today and gone tomorrow. I mean, literally.
That's correct. Well, that's exactly what happens here in Northwest Pennsylvania. They're sometimes like you'll have a week of great hunting, and all of a sudden, nothing. And then maybe a second flight will come in from Canada or whatever in the fall, and they'll be on for a couple of days, and you're off. So you have to catch them when they're it's almost you have to catch them at the right time.
Love it. Okay, yep. We can't go without asking, especially considering you already mentioned the woodcock's primary diet. Have you found a recipe that actually works for woodcock?
Well, me, not really. What I do. I take the breast meat off is what I like to do with them, and I saute them a little bit in olive oil and garlic, and I'll throw that in tomato sauce.
Oh.
It's a gamier. It's a little bit gamier than your regular, you know, like your pheasant or your grouse, which is a excellent table fare. But to me, woodcock's a little bit gamier, but they are edible. And what I do is I'll chop that breast up a little bit. Saute that meat a little bit in olive oil and some garlic, and then I'll dump that in tomato sauce, and I'll pour that over your linguine or your fettuccine, whatever you like. So
sounds pretty good. I'm a little bit hungry right now, so I could probably go for that, whether it's woodcock or anything better. That's spectacular, and I'm I didn't even ask. How rude of me. How was your season?
Pretty good. We had a really good woodcock season. Now, last year's season in 2018 was much better because I shot better. But I bagged 14 and 18. In 2018, I bagged 14 woodcock. This year, I only bagged 6. But I, you know, it seemed like I was always out of position. The dogs would lock up, and then I would walk up, and the bird would go out the different way. It's no excuse, but I mean, it is what it is. You know, I missed.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Like I said,
lots of fun, though.
I got a lot of pictures of shot up alder trees.
Oh, yeah. I tell you what, I run a 28 gauge, so, and I just bought a 410, and I'm going to try that this fall, too. So,
well, I mean, you're going from bad to worse.
Yeah. Well, it is what it is, but I know I can hit them. It's just that this year I seem like I was, I don't know, maybe I got too excited, or I don't know. I was always out of position, and the bird kind of flew the way that I didn't want it to go, but it was a great, year.
Yeah, listen to that, everybody else. Let's put everything in perspective. He shot 6 birds, and it was a great year. Just remember that the next time. You don't bring home a limit, everybody. Oh, John, thank you for bringing up the happiness quotient on the podcast. Good job.
Yes.
Thanks, and I hope next season you shoot 7.
All right, thank you, Scott. I hope I get a little bit more than that myself, but that's good, too. Yeah.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye, sir.
And one of his colleagues, Mark Cross, says his favorite bird is ruffed grouse. Something about the king of the uplands. You know, if you haven't read all of those great stories by all sorts of sportsmen of the 19th century, they call him the king of game birds. And there's a lot to be said for that. But of course, my good friend George Cummins over there in Pennsylvania, speaking of which, John Pivetta, says pheasants have always been what he chased the most. And he's still doing that. I saw him last fall out there doing it, but he's now becoming a believer in prairie birds. Starting to, kind of change his travel plans, he says. Good job, George. I hope to see you again this fall out there in South Dakota as well. And this guy, we're back to the phones, by the way, here on the Upland Nation podcast. And this guy, Brandon, he says he's cooking up some free-range protein of a slightly different sort. Brandon, what are you doing over there these days?
Well, right now I'm just frying up some crappie for dinner and enjoying it. So the quarantine.
Okay, so all right. So how'd you catch him?
Oh, just on some jigs at a friend's pond. Nothing too fancy.
Nice. Well, you're making us all jealous this time of year. Yeah, you got to practice your social distancing, but I guess one rod length is probably about 6 foot, isn't it?
Absolutely. Good. Absolutely.
Excellent. Well, while you're cooking, tell us a little bit about your favorite game bird and why.
I live in Illinois, and so we don't have a lot of wild game birds here, and so a lot of times we have to go to farms, but for what we do, chucker just seem to be great. You know, good flying bird, good looking bird, and just a lot of fun and a challenge. It just seems like when they hold tight and all of a sudden they just bang, it's like they're shot out of a can and they'll just take off. And so it makes it a little bit challenging and it makes it fun.
Well, come out here and I'll show you some real chuckers.
Absolutely. You're out in Oregon, correct?
Yes, I am. And when I'm not talking on the podcast and it's fall, that's where I am. I'm out in the rocks over there. And it's funny you bring up the coloring because to me, I just wrote an article for Shooting Sportsman magazine on chucker hunting. And I described them as vividly colored. And those of you who don't know what a chucker looks, just Google it. You'll find out. He had me change, the editor of the magazine had me change that to drab. hey, listen, he signs the checks. All right.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I've got a family out in Oregon. I'd love to come out chucker hunting. It just seems like I haven't had a chance to make it out there. So
it's a commitment, you know, not just getting here, but then after that, the first thing you do is walk uphill for an hour and then you load your gun. But, you know, I'm intrigued with your choice being from over there, you know, far away from that, but they are a pretty gamey bird, even out your way, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. A lot around here, you can find here and there, you can find some coveys of quail. And if you go a little bit more northern parts of the state, you can find some wild pheasant. And that's fun. But, you know, it's just something about that chucker, maybe just because it's a non-native species. And it just seems like it holds tight. And then when they go and they're just, it's really interesting. They're a fun bird. You know, a pheasant almost just doesn't seem fair. It seems like more of a wild chicken around here.
Now you're getting a little bit too provincial over there, but that's okay. You know, there is some element of exotic in a chucker, no matter where you find it. And that is, there is something to be said for that. I agree 100%. How are you finding those birds? Are you kicking them up yourself or you got some canine help?
Yeah, we have my father-in-law has been a longtime bird hunter, and he's actually the one who got me started, 6 or 7 years ago on bird hunting. And I fell in love the first time I watched the dogs work. And, you know, he's always had German short hairs. And sometimes I just like to sit back and watch the dog work instead of, you know, shooting. But and ever since then, I've fallen in love. I started as a whitetail deer hunter, and I have now my preferred hunting is upland birds. And there's always constant action. There's always constant movement. And then when you've got a good companion and a good bird dog with you, it can't beat it.
Yeah. I mean, you've just summed it up in about 25 words. You're absolutely right. And it's true. And by the way, welcome to the fraternity. You have been assimilated, as they say. Yeah, well, good on you, and glad to hear it. Can you remember your first time behind a bird dog, and what you felt like when a bird got up in front of you?
This is kind of a unique story. I can. My father-in-law, we knew he was a big bird hunter, so we purchased at a charity auction a bird hunt for him, and it just so happens a week before we had the hunt set up, I had torn my Achilles. And so mine was a little different. I was actually in a cast on a four-wheeler with a gun on my first bird hunt. So it was a little bit awkward, to say at least, but, you know, I didn't do a whole lot of shooting. I just did a lot of watching and kind of putzing behind everybody on a four-wheeler because I didn't want to be in the way. And, you know, and then a couple times towards the end, they gave me a gun and they'd get me on the bird and the handler, my father-in-law and another guy who had dogs, they would kind of get the bird going for me and point me in a safe direction. And so my first bird hunting situation was a little bit unique, to say the least.
So I don't know if I'd, you know, I'd go anywhere else if I could be chauffeured on every bird hunt from now on.
Yeah, there's a lot more walking now. So
yeah, you've learned that fairly quickly, I'm sure. Yeah, good. Well, it's spectacular to hear somebody who's coming. The bloom hasn't come off the rose yet on a guy like you, but for all of us, you've just summed up a lot of the reasons why we go, and that's our goal today, is to stay positive, think about the future. We're all going to be hunting this fall. Brandon, you just got us psyched again. Thanks so much for being on the Upland Nation podcast.
Absolutely. My pleasure, and thanks for having me.
Save me a crappie. Bye-bye.
Absolutely. Bye-bye.
And John Sunderland says, quail is his favorite species. It's the one I started on 59 years ago. You know, I'll tell you, we can learn from those guys. We had our friend David from Canada on earlier. He said he's been hunting a lot longer than that, longer than John, in fact. And those guys they're a real treasure. If you ever get the chance to hang out with one of those guys, let alone go hunting with one of them, you know, that's the kind of guy that at the end of the hunt, you hand over a full bottle of something old from Scotland, and maybe he'll share it with you. But even if he doesn't, he's deserved that reward. All right, let's get back to the phones.
Go ahead. Are you going to ask me questions? Or?
Let me ask the questions. Here we go. So Celia is taking over. She wants to be a podcast producer. It's obvious. where are you calling from?
I am in Iowa, Northwest Iowa, Cherokee County.
Okay. Mm-hmm. How close to Akron, Ohio is that?
We're about maybe 40 minutes from that, I would say.
One of my
Probably hunted there.
Oh, yeah. Yes, I have. And boy, do I have some fond memories. But that you can watch that on YouTube now, by the way. But anyway.
Oh, awesome.
So how was your hunting season?
Oh, it was wonderful. It was really special this year for me because I was owning my own business. I retired from that. I sold my business. So I was able to hunt a lot this year, and my dogs are extremely happy.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah, as long as you can afford to buy the dog food, you've pretty much hit the trifecta there, I think.
Oh,
good,
yes.
Good on you, and congratulations, by the way.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
What do you, if you had to narrow it down, and this was probably a good season to narrow, what's your favorite bird species?
I really love the prairie grouse. Don't get me wrong, I'm an Iowa person, you know, so I love my pheasant, but I love the prairie because the dogs that I run, I have two Jawtars, and they are big runners, and they are wonderful to watch on the prairie.
Well, I should have guessed that with, and I'm the same way. I mean, even at 800 yards, you can still see that beard if you look hard enough. So, I mean, but see, we know from previous conversations earlier in the podcast and from our own personal experience, there's more than one prairie bird out there. I mean, is it Sharpies or is it chickens?
I like the Sharpies. I always find they play the game a lot nicer.
Yeah.
I think they're a little bit easier to hunt. So I'm going to say chickens because, you know, I don't know if I can say this, but I call them frickin' chickens. I'm sure you've heard that before.
I've called them a lot worse.
I know. Yeah, but no, I really enjoy the chickens. I think they're an incredible bird. You know, we're encroaching more and more in their territory, so appreciate them while you can.
Yeah, and already we're seeing, of course, in some states where some subspecies are prohibited from hunting,
yeah.
But others are not. When you're out there, are you running both your dogs at the same time?
No, I don't. And that's just specifically because if you know the nature of these dogs, it's really hard when one dog's 200 yards on point and the other one's 150 yards in the other direction. So, and I hunt by myself. My husband hunts as well, but he has two Springer Spaniels.
Well, don't hold that against him.
I'm not. I started out actually with a Springer, and I came into the draught in a funny way, but that's another story.
I love it.
Yeah, so we do hunt separately, so it's easier for me to run one dog at a time.
Okay,
and I like it better.
So the bigger question is not whether you get along okay. It's is he out there hunting the prairies with those Springers as well?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know why I'm asking that, because your dog's going to be a 400 yard dog, and those Springers, if they get 30 yards out, they're too far.
Pretty much, yeah. You know, but the funny thing about the Springers, they're wonderful during early season. The nature of those prairie grouse changes, right, as soon as it gets cold. So in the early season, a Springer is a really good dog to run on the prairie. Yeah, I agree. I think it's a good thing.
I've never thought about it before.
Yeah.
And I'm like you though. I got ugly dogs, and they 400 yards is a close working dog out on those prairies.
Oh sure, yeah.
Well, good for you. Now, so what is they're mysterious to me. You know, and I admitted earlier in the podcast, most of the time when I shoot a prairie chicken, it's by mistake.
Oh, okay.
But what is it about them that you enjoy so much?
Just the challenge of them. I find that the prairie chickens group up in such large numbers. You've got so many eyes watching you.
Yeah.
I like a challenge. I'm the crazy person who likes to hunt, scale quail. You know, a lot of people go, oh my God, those running son of guns, don't want to go near them. But I like those sort of things, you know?
Yeah.
If it's easy, we wouldn't do it, right?
Yeah, you know, it's like, well, we had a caller earlier. He says, I'm going from a 28 gauge to a 410. I said, geez, could you make it any harder? Yeah, don't load the thing.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because that's what I used, 410 and a 28 when I was in New Mexico.
Yeah.
Over the winter. Yeah. And they're perfect for quail. Yeah.
Well, I'm doing more and more of that small gauge stuff as well. And, and there is something to be said for it. You know, it's kind of the fly fishing of bird hunting, or maybe the upstream dry fly only fly fishing of bird hunting would be a 410. But
sure.
So do you have a strategy when you're hunting? You got a pointing dog and you got a big piece of ground and you know there's chickens somewhere. How are you going to start that hunt? What's your strategy?
Well, I've been doing it for probably about 13 years, hunting the prairie grouse. And what I look for is any kind of like a rolling terrain, because you can sort of predict where they're going to be. On the south facing side of a slope, that's usually a good spot. They like to roost. I look for things like, habitat. I mean, like every hunter, you look for, rose hips and, I don't know exactly what it's called. It's some kind of a sage, but it's very fine. It's
sure.
Not like the Wisconsin, the Wyoming sage.
Okay.
It's just very light.
Okay.
So basically I'm looking for like food sources, that sort of thing. Yeah.
Love it. And even in the early season, they're grouping up on those south facing slopes.
Yeah. Sometimes they're mostly in their family units then.
Yeah.
So you're talking about, and of course, it's a lot easier to get the nice males, like the older ones in the early season, because they're separated. They're still segregated. They haven't, formed those huge, like 200 bird flocks yet, And that's when it becomes hard.
Yeah, well, for you. I mean, yeah. it's always hard for me, but yeah. that's my problem, not yours. Well, I'm intrigued with that, and I hope to mm-hmm. actually spend a little bit more serious time doing that this year. Maybe I'll run into you somewhere out there in that vast sea of grass. Celia, sure. it's enjoyable talking with you. Thank you so much for being a part of the Upland Nation podcast.
Well, thanks for calling. I've enjoyed your show over the years. I've actually met you before.
Oh.
At Pheasant Fest. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
We talked about chucker hunting in Oregon.
Well, standing which is another, invitation. Come on
yep,
down.
Which is another fun thing to do.
Yes, it is. You know? Talk about challenging. That's yep. I describe what you do, what you enjoy most is what I'm starting to enjoy most is a slightly more level ground.
Oh, so. Sure. Yeah. I'm not a spring chicken by any means.
Okay. Well, so. Well, make sure you throw a rock at me or something if you're at Pheasant Fest and I haven't said hello yet.
Oh, no problem.
Thanks so much.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for calling. Bye-bye.
In a touching Facebook comment from Matt Templeton, he says, it's a hard one to narrow it down, but he says, either whatever my son shot on his first hunt or whatever my old dog found on his last hunt. Yeah, thank you, dogs, for all of your work. Thank you, sons, if you have any, or daughters for that matter, for accompanying us and changing the texture of our hunts in so many ways. And we got time for one more caller on the line with me right now. Billy, welcome to the program. How are you?
Pretty good. How you doing?
I am finer than frog hair, as they say. Maybe you've heard that expression a time or two.
Yeah.
Yeah. So tell me, how was your bird hunting season last fall?
It was pretty good. A little low from the year before last. We had a lot of rain here, a lot of flooding all summer last year. So
yeah, that'll do it.
Yeah, we didn't have as good a hatch as usual, but we find 5 or 6 coveys of birds. We're doing good around here. So,
well, I'd say you're doing good just about everywhere. 5 or 6 coveys, you know, these days.
Yeah. It's been coming back a little bit the last few years. It got pretty bad there, you know, for about 10 years ago. You couldn't hardly find a bird anywhere around this part of the country, but they're doing a little bit to bring birds back, so.
Good, good. And just for those of us who may not have figured it out yet, we're talking about quail here, right?
Yeah, bobwhite quail.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we talk covey birds and 5 or 6 or 10 or 12 coveys in a day. All of a sudden, you don't have many choices. It's got to be them. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's about all we have here. A few woodcock. And
so, what are you running these days? What kind of dogs?
English pointers.
Yeah.
That's what I've always had. Well, I've had other dogs, but that's kind of my favorite dog. That's what I've had one ever since I was a little kid. So.
Yeah. Some people would say they're the only dog.
Yeah, that's kind of the way I look at it.
What is it about pointers you like so much?
Well, I think it's just whatever you're used to. You know, that's what I had, my dad had, you know, that's what when I go bird hunting, that's what I think pointer, setter. When I was a kid, that's only two dogs I thought there was. You know, I never seen a German short hair or wire hair around in the 60s, you know, around here. I didn't even know they existed until, you know, like in the 80s. Pointers and setters is all we had.
Yeah, there were two dogs and one bird. And
yeah, that's it.
Oh my! Well, things have changed a bit since then, and I'm gonna guess, but you tell me what your favorite bird species is.
Bobwhite quail.
Yeah, I figured as much. What is it about them that you like so much? And you've got a lot. You've had a lot of time to think about this.
Like I said, it's just what I'm used to hunting, and
yeah,
that's all we had. You know, all my life, pretty much. I've hunted other birds, but it's just the memories that I have, and you know, my dad and uncle used to go when I was a kid, and you know, it's just I guess that's why it's my favorite, because this brings back old memories, you know.
I love it. I don't have any of those, so I need to live through you guys in that regard. Yeah. I didn't take up bird hunting until I got a bird dog by accident, and I was a lot more mature than, well, I shouldn't say, I was a lot older than most people when they got started. I'm still not mature. I promise never to act my age, just to act my IQ.
Yeah.
So
stay young that way.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Even if you don't want to. So is there, you know, you're out there, you're walking around with family members, a good friend, something like that. Dog goes on point. What are you really anticipating next? I mean, what is it that gets you about those birds once you're right there and it's a retail setting and you really got to get on it?
To me, it's just the excitement of the explosion, you know.
Yeah.
A big covey rise or even a single. It's just the surprise of it, you know.
Yeah, you know, I'm thinking about, yeah, and you know, those little birds, you know, out here it's valley quail, but they're about the same size basically.
Yeah,
they all have, I mean, the wing beat of those little birds, it's just so different than like a bigger bird, like a pheasant or even a sharp tail or something like that. It's like a buzz. It's like you hit the beehive and everybody's really mad at you.
Yeah,
it just gets you going.
It's like everything stops. You know, you're watching the dogs run, and then just like every time freezes, pretty much, is the way I look at it.
Yeah, you know, back when I was playing a lot more baseball than I do now, there were guys who thought they could actually see the seams on the ball as it was coming at them when they were batting. You know,
yeah.
You ever get that feeling when you're hunting quail that everything goes into slow motion?
Yeah, it does. Sometimes you can tell if it's a rooster or a hen, you know, it just like slows down so much.
Yeah.
But it did a lot better when I could see better when I was younger with it. Now they're pretty much a blur, but.
Yeah. Yeah. So, as long as you can distinguish between a bird and a guy.
Yeah. That's the main thing. Huh?
Yeah. I remember one of the first mountain quail I ever shot jumped in a, he was hanging with a bunch of valley quail. And if you don't know the difference, folks, go look it up. They're slightly bigger and they're slightly differently colored, but the breast is what you're looking at. And these are going away birds, but it did happen. I saw that bird and I said, I know that's a mountain quail.
Yeah.
It's never happened since, but, but there is that aspect that, and I bet everybody's had it in one way or another on one magic bird, maybe per season or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I just love hearing these stories about families and traditions, and I guess that's what it is a family tradition now that I think about it. But
yeah, it is for us because, you know, me and my youngest son, he hunts with me a lot. And,
yeah.
Well, he's about the only one I hunt with anymore, pretty much.
Yeah.
I got two other sons that they don't get to hunt with me as much, but me and him go every chance we get, which is about at least 2 or 3 times a week.
Oh boy. Well, now you're just making us mad.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad for you and for the traditions that you're carrying on to the next generation. I mean, this is the kind of stuff that we're all looking forward to. Everybody on the podcast today has given us more reasons to look forward to next fall and what I'm confident we're going to be hunting next fall, despite all of the bad news out there. So thanks for getting us even more psyched up, Billy.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Yeah, it was nice talking to you.
Same here. Thanks a bunch. See ya.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks.
And, you know, maybe there's a new tradition in your future, whether it's with friends or family or anybody else. And that's the whole point here is let's have reasons to look downrange. One reason might be your dog and keeping your dog safe. Gunner Kennels is the way to do that. They're my kennel of choice. Learn more at gunner.com. I get their emails and they send me all sorts of stuff and I am just astounded at how well these kennels will protect your dog. And if your dog is as important to you as mine is to me, then price is really not the determining factor. I looked at pictures from a rollover accident where 7 kids and a dog all survived just fine. No, the kids weren't in the Gunner kennel, but the dog was. The NYPD is now using Gunner kennels in their canine operations. You know, it's all about safety. It's the only 5-star safety rated dog crate around. Learn more about what they're doing and why they're doing it. Watch some of those videos. They are eye-opening, mind-boggling eye-opening. Just watch the videos at gunner.com. And after that, head on over to doctor.com and get in on the savings. Use the code SLUN10 for a 10% discount off anything over $200, including the T&B dual collar system. Two collars, put them both on one dog, put them both on different dogs, two sets of buttons. You don't have to toggle. You can keep your gloves on. You don't have to press the touch screen. And I'll tell you, those things have the best battery life I've ever run into. And I own 24 collars. T&B Dual is my collar of choice for teaching Flick how to stay steady and retrieve with grace and panache. Learn more at dogtra.com. This land is your land, and you need to remember that sometimes, especially in times like this when we're prevented from enjoying so much of it. Let's not get complacent about our privileges and our rights. Most of the time I talk about places to go that are in the public domain in this feature, and I'm going to do that again right now. But before I do, let me remind you that if you're looking for new ideas, you might want to check out my new website, findbirdhuntingspots.com. One of the spots that you'll learn a little bit about there, but I'll go into more detail very soon on the website, is Susanville, California. I know, it sounds like one of those made-up names in a TV sitcom about people who wear overalls and have straw between their teeth, but no, Susanville is a thriving community in Northeast California that has all the comforts of home, so if you forgot anything, you can get them there. But on the positive side, hundreds of thousands of acres of Bureau of Land Management land opened to you and me. You'll see some wild horses. You'll find some chuckers and you'll find some valley quail. Just be mindful of the ammo and firearms laws. Beware and plan ahead. Susanville, California. If you're going to the People's Republic, you might as well stop and check out the public ground available near Susanville. And just one quick reminder, ESPAmerica.com. Please remember that hearing loss is cumulative. Prevent it by using a well-fitted, well-designed, and reliable hearing protection device. My devices of choice come from Jack Homa and my friends at ESP America. That stands for Electronic Shooters Protection America.com. ESPAmerica.com. And on that note, or should I say those notes that you're hearing right now in the background, it's time to wrap things up here at the Upland Nation podcast. I hope you got some positivity and some ideas from our conversation with so many great callers. Enjoyed every one of them. Thank you all for being a part of the Upland Nation podcast. And those of you who listen as well, you know, if you will please subscribe, rate, or review the Upland Nation podcast, it will be most helpful both for my ego, but mainly for the sponsors who look at that kind of stuff and keep this thing on the air. Please tell your friends. If you want to talk, visit me at the Upland Nation or the Wing Shooting USA Facebook pages. It may be a time to shelter in place, but that doesn't mean you can't give your family a hug, your friends a phone call, and your dogs a little bit extra training. Enjoy yourself during this time of challenges. And remember, there is a light at the end of the tunnel. It may be dim right now, but the tunnel is getting shorter and shorter as we get through this mess. I hope to see you in the field next year, next fall. Thank you again for listening. I'm Scott Linden. This is the Upland Nation Podcast.